The reading this morning is taken from the Gospel according to Matthew, chapter 5, beginning to read at verse 13. You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on a stand, and it gives light to everywhere in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven. This is the word of the Lord.
So I take it, you've finished Genesis, I think, haven't you? Finished looking through bits of Genesis. So I take it you can remember back to when you did Matthew chapter 5, verses 1 through to 12, because this is really just following on from there. Who's who, you remember? It's a directory of all the important people who live in our country, people who've done various extraordinary things, contributed something to the wealth and the health of the nation in different ways. And if your name is recorded in such a book, we're told you've made it. Now, before you go and check to see whether you're listed in there or not, let me ask you, how many of these names would be in God's who's who, if there was such a volume? How many of those lives would have achieved anything of lasting, eternal value? Some, I guess. But not many. You see, often the ones we believe are the ones who make a difference, who can really change the world, are people we see in high positions, those who hold power, those who have money, such as those listed in Who's Who. But Matthew chapter 5 teaches us that the ones who really make a difference are, well, actually, I'm looking at you. In fact, just look around at each other. Point to your neighbour. Tell them you're the one who can make a difference. We're the ones who can really change the world and make a difference. And we're the ones who can do something that will last for eternity, whose names are in God's who's who. Now, that's quite a big boast, isn't it? But it's what Jesus says about us in these verses in Matthew chapter 5. Jesus expects us to be involved in the world and to make a difference. It's part of what it means to be a follower of Jesus. Now, the sermon is the Sermon on the Mount. And this sermon of Jesus is not just a nice code of ethics which good people follow. It's the standard which Jesus expects us to follow. It's what he sets for us if we're going to be his followers. Now, Jesus has been explaining in the verses of 1 to 12 the sorts of qualities that his followers must display. They will be thirsting after righteousness. They will be meek. They will be peacemakers. They will be pure in heart. And of course, the obvious question is, what kind of influence can such people have in the world? They look so weak and feeble. And Jesus' answer is that we are salt and light. Not that we should be, but that we are. We can have a profound influence for good. So in God's plan, people who have been transformed by the power of the gospel, who are living lives marked by the qualities of verses 1 through to 12, are to penetrate the world with the life-changing message of God. And this message must be lived out by his followers in the world. So Jesus never expects such qualities to be lived in nice, cozy communities like churchy salt cellars or nice, warm light shops. We are to be in the world, being, as Jesus says, salt and light. That's what we are. It's not a tough option for the keen Christians, the special forces Christian. It's the command that Jesus gives for all his followers. We are salt and light. Salt is for putrid meat and light is for dark places. And it's a task which the whole church together is to be devoted to. You, plural, says Jesus, are the salt of the earth. You, plural, are the light of the world. So a few are called to work full-time and get paid to work in the church. A few are called and get paid to work full-time as the church in the world. That's what my job is, I suppose, in the army. But all are called to be in the world and living and interacting with those who are not Christians. And the church, if you like, now I'm aware that the Apostle Paul didn't use this illustration, but anyway, the church, if you like, is like a giant octopus with its tentacles finding its way into all sorts of areas where Christians work and spend their time. And it's in those places that the Christian church, represented by individual Christians, you and me, are to be salt and light. So as we look at this passage, I want you to think of your place of work or where you spend your time if you're not working anymore, and three challenges that Jesus gives us. Challenge one, understand the world. And the unflattering assumption that Jesus gives in these verses is that the world is a decaying, putrid, dark place. Salt in the ancient world, and indeed sometimes today, is used as a preservative. So in the days where there were no fridges and freezers, salt would be used to stop food going off. It was rubbed into meat, for example, to stop it decaying. It would be used to stop fish rotting. And the assumption is that the world is like that fish or meat. It's rotting away. It needs the protection of salt to keep it from decaying any quicker. Of course, salt won't stop the rot completely, but it will stop the rotting process. We'll take the next verse about light. The assumption, again, is that the world is a dark place. You don't need lights in a lighted room, do you? Only where it's dark and dingy. The world is in darkness. And Jesus says that the world needs Christians to be in it, to slow the rot, to shine in the darkness. Now, Jesus' assessment of the world goes against the grain, doesn't it? I know there's stuff going on. We've mentioned them in our prayers, the Texas shootings, Ukraine, and all those things. There's stuff going on around us which is bad and it's evil. But generally speaking, if you don't want to think about the world as rotting away morally, physically, spiritually. Many would point to the great advances in technology that we've seen in recent years. The great leaps and bounds we've made in healthcare, the way food production has been enhanced, so we've got loads of things now. Many would rejoice that God has been pushed out of the picture in the Western world because of the so-called Enlightenment. We're living in a post-Christian age, we're told. And yet is it a new dawn? Are we living in a wonderful world? Things are going to get worse in the next few months if the grain from Ukraine can't get out. We've seen those pictures on our screens. Violent crime. Increasing teenage pregnancy. Spiraling divorce rates. No end of broken hearts. Let's be realistic. We live in a rotting world, a dark world. And I haven't really mentioned the really bad things going on yet either. One of the most graphic illustrations, perhaps, of this is seen in the film Good Morning Vietnam. Don't worry, I won't say it the way it normally was said. Starring Robin Williams. Williams played an American Forces DJ. And in one particular scene, he's playing a record by Louis Armstrong. What a Wonderful World. And as the camera pans around, it moves from the studio to the world outside, and there's scenes of napalm exploding, children being burnt alive, while villages are being destroyed. And as we watch the pictures, Louis Armstrong sings on, "I see trees of green and skies of blue, and I say to myself, what a wonderful world." The world is a wonderful place. But our experience also shows it's a very dark and terrible place of suffering. And this is Jesus' assumption in these verses. The world is for all its beauty and for all of God's goodness towards us, it's slowly decaying and it's becoming darker and darker. And it's vitally important that we grasp the seriousness of the situation. For only then can we administer the correct medicine of the gospel of Jesus Christ to this sick world. We need to understand our world. And that's the first challenge. And the second challenge is slow the rot. You are the salt of the earth. It'd be very easy to get depressed looking at our world, and yet there is hope. And here's the surprise. The hope is you and me. You are the salt of the earth. You who are meek and the peacemakers and the persecuted, you are the salt of the earth. It's incredible, isn't it? So what does Jesus mean? Well, we've seen already, salt in the ancient world was used as a preservative. It slowed the rotting of food. And it's as if Jesus is saying to us Christians that we are the ones who've been given the task of slowing the rot in the world around us. We are, if you like, to be that moral disinfectant for a world which is, for the world in which we live. We have God's morality and truth. And so Jesus says, live it out in the world. Slow the rot which is taking place. Rub yourself into the flesh of the world and get involved. Stand up for biblical ideals and show a better way. Now, I don't think Jesus is asking you to go into the office on Monday morning and stand on your desk and say, woe to you heathen, woe to all the evils that you did on Saturday night. He's not telling me as an army chaplain to go in and get the regiment on parade and tell them, woe is you, you're all going to hell for all the stuff you've done over the weekend. There are people, by the way, who are called to do such things in the public sphere, maybe not as blatantly as that. Archbishops, they've got the opportunity to do that. Christian MPs, they are to bring salt in the public sphere, pointing out that something is wrong and suggesting in its place something that is right. And we should support their work, by the way. Perhaps by lobbying our MP about some of the stuff going on at the moment. Showing that the gay agenda is not the only one, or the trans agenda is not the only one available. In fact, it's not, shouldn't be available at all. The Christian one is the right one. Christians down the years have always got involved in the public sphere, and we've always had wonderful successes in the promotion of biblical ideals. William Wilberforce, Lord Shaftesbury, Dr. Bernardo, George Muller, and others. They were Christians who acted as salt in the public realm and were able to make big changes. And how we need men and women like that today. So let's pray for Christians in Parliament that they would be salt, slowing the rot by promoting God's values. Let's pray for Christians to be involved in the media that they would be salt in those rotting places. Christians must be seen taking a stand in this public realm. But most of us are not in the public sphere. So how can we be salt of the earth? Well, more often than not, being salt means not so much saying anything, but being something. In other words, the quality of our lives is to be the way we show our saltiness. So we are to live lives which are distinctive from the world around us, putting into practice these gospel qualities which Jesus talks about in verses 1 to 12. So take, for instance, the woman or the man that works in the office. She tries not to swear. She doesn't get involved in the backbiting that often happens when the boss's back is turned. And when the dirty jokes are flying around, she quietly slips away to get a cup of coffee because, well, it's clear they make her feel uncomfortable. She never makes a big thing about it. She wouldn't have a go at others, but she just doesn't get involved in that kind of thing. She tries to say a warm hello to the receptionist each morning, and she remembers when her colleague's mother has to go into hospital, so she can ask how she is. She works hard. She tries not to complain. She tries not to put other people down when she's tired or overworked. And over time, people begin to notice. Some don't like it. Jesus, of course, said it, verse 13, that we will be persecuted. Salt does bite, doesn't it? We talk about rubbing salt into wounds. And in our society, which is wounded, the Christian life and message will challenge. It will hurt. But others secretly respect her. Some will even stop swearing because they know she doesn't like it. I'm not describing Samantha, the super Christian. But actually all this lady is doing, and there are plenty like her, who do it, is just applying the teaching of the Bible to the workplace. Not in some super spiritual show-off sort of way, but not being judgmental, but in a way that is humble and gracious. She loves her Lord, and she wants to be salt in that office. And so she's living a life which is distinct from those around her. Now notice too, before we move on, that there is a warning. Jesus says, if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled by men. Now, I'm not a chemist, but I think that, strictly speaking, salt can't lose its saltiness. But what often happened in the ancient world was that salt would be mixed up with other impurities so that it was good for nothing, just a mushy white mess, just fit for being thrown out. And Jesus isn't talking, teaching us chemistry here, but he's making a very serious point. If we are not being salty and distinctive in the world in which we live and work, then we are as good as tasteless white mush. We're as good as the rotting and putrid world around us. In fact, the word for lose its saltiness literally means to be a fool. A foolish Christian has no impact on the world. The Christian who goes with the flow in that office, who swears like the rest, who backbites like the rest, whose lifestyle, leaving dues and end of year's parties leaves a lot to be desired, is fit for nothing, according to Jesus. They have lost their saltiness. They too are like putrid and rotting fish, fit for nothing except to be thrown out. And that's Jesus' warning. Do not be conformed to the world around you. Be distinct. Be salty. The Church of England, by the way, needs to hear that loud and clear. Because I think we're on the way out if we're not careful. Heading for disaster. So let me ask, is this you? Are you salty? Or have you lost your saltiness? You are the salt of the earth. Challenge 3 is to spread the light. You are the light of the world. And if the challenge of the previous verse was don't lose it, the challenge of this verse is don't hide it. You see, both salt and light are complementary. Salt has a negative effect of slowing the rot, but light has the positive effect of pointing the way and bringing light to darkness. Now, the interesting thing is, Jesus does not say you are the honey of the world. He says you are salt. You are light. And so we're not just in the world to be sweet and nice. We're in the world to be distinct and to point the world to Jesus. And it's this latter half that Jesus is teaching us now. For it's not enough simply to be different. People need to know why we are different. And the answer comes from where we get our light. Jesus himself is the light of the world. We simply reflect that light. So when you look at the moon, you don't actually see the moon shining on a bright night. You see that silvery light of the moon is actually reflected from the sun. And so the Christian is to reflect the light of Jesus Christ. We're not simply nicer people than the rest in the office. Rather, we follow a Lord who has set a different standard. a Lord who has paid the ultimate price to get us out of this dark and rotting world, a Lord who longs for others to come to him too, and we are the means by which he leads others to him. We are lights who point to the light. But of course, a big temptation is to conceal the light, to hide the real reason why we are different. And I guess many of us can testify to lost opportunities when someone has perhaps asked why we're different or what makes us tick, and we've squirmed and we've wiggled and eventually said something wishy-washy and vague, being a little bit like Boris and the parties. Well, I don't want to make you feel guilty here, but let's ask God to keep giving us those opportunities, and then to have the courage to take them when they come, for we have nothing to be ashamed of. So Jesus gives two illustrations of what we are to be like. We are to be like a city on a hill. You can see it for miles around. It can't be hidden. And so too the Christian who is being truly salty in the world, nor do you hide your light under a bed. You put it on a lampstand so that it shines for all to see. Don't hide the light, says Jesus. You're here for a reason, to point people to me. And notice again the way this happens. Verse 16, in the same way, let your light shine before men that they may see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven. Again, it is the life that you lead which is so effective. We are like the shop windows. People can look at us and see, imperfectly maybe, but they see the light of Christ. And notice, it's not us who get the glory, but God. Well, do you want to change the world? It is possible. Maybe not in big ways, but little by little we can slow the rot and spread the light. It's not rocket science, it's just authentic Christianity. It's the Christian's privilege and responsibility. It won't always be easy, but it's what we are called to do. Hear the challenge. Don't lose it. Don't hide it. For you are the salt of the earth, and you are the light of the world. Amen.